This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Input on programming. The PC works with KPFT's management around a range of programming matters. KPFT is seeking 6 listener members to participate in the program council. Visit kpft.org to apply now. At kpft.org, you can find full information about the program council, what it does, and how it works. You can also submit your own nomination to the program council. KPFT encourages members of our diverse listening audience to get involved in this radio station. Visit kpft.org for information about the program council. This is KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Falinski,
Jennifer Renee,
Ryan Levinka,
J.D. Doyle,
Summer Iman,
and Glenn Holt. Wow, we have a full house tonight. And on tonight's show, in our second hour at 10 o'clock, we are going to debut J.D. Doyle's newest queer music project. It's called Out Radio. And coming up in our first hour, news wrap from This Way Out tonight reporting that the State Senate of New Jersey has rejected a gay marriage bill, but Rhode Island lawmakers have overridden their governor's veto of a measure to allow lesbians and gay men to plan the funerals of their deceased partners. Following that, we have our usual feature segments from This Way Out. But first, Queer Voices Washington political correspondent David Elliott will be joining us from Washington, D.C. to discuss our GLBT future in 2010. And before David Elliott, it's everybody in the studio for something a little bit special.
Well, yes, we have our favorite music person here, J.D. Doyle.
Thank you.
Which we haven't seen in... What was the last time you were here? 1982?
No, I don't remember. This is rare. It'll be less rare in the future.
Did you check out... Did you check into a hotel so you could spend the night in Houston?
Weren't you going to put me up?
I don't know.
Yes. After all, you're in the Woodlands now.
The Woodlands. That's like a whole other county.
It took 40 minutes. That's not too bad to get here.
It took me 30 minutes from where I live in the west end of town.
We're a little...
I'm in the city limits.
We're inner loop biased, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that. I came special tonight to intro my new radio show. Y'all know this month is the 10th anniversary of Queer Music Heritage, and that'll be on in a couple weeks with an interview with Holly Neer. That's pretty special. But I wanted to debut a different show because QMH is more of a history show, and I get a lot of new music by GLBT artists that I neglect, and I don't like that. So I'm going to have lots of fun with Out Radio. The first episode will air tonight. There's more on the internet, and the first show is the best of 2009. So my choice is of the cream of the crop from last year.
Well, that's fabulous. And there's really probably no other showcase except for maybe Audiophile, which you also helped put together, of showcasing new queer music.
Well, there are other radio shows around the country, local programs, most of them internet-based, almost all of them internet-based, as far as pure music.
Great.
Are there any dance music? Any oomph?
Yes, there are.
Oh,
And the Out Radio for this month is 4 segments. The 4th segment, I had you in mind, it's all dance music.
I like the dance music.
Oh, that's great.
I'm sure I'm not the only one.
Well, and that's really interesting because... queer music probably in the earlier years is more to sort of the folky type stuff, the women's music, but it certainly has grown to all different genres. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, yes. Hip-hop, country western, blues, jazz, anything. Expect it all on Out Radio.
Great. So you're going to do that a monthly piece?
It'll be monthly, but it'll be several hours. It'll be on the internet-based. Y'all were kind enough to let me debut the first hour this month. The first hour will be available in the future, if you want to do it, but mainly internet-based.
And hopefully you'll keep us up to date on some of this music.
Absolutely.
That we can be playing during the segments, in between our segments here.
Glenn has already put some digs in for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we feature some of those really good queer artists.
We all have the same evil minds. Well, it's great that you're doing this, and J.D., it's great to have you here. this week to sort of debut this and talk a little bit about this. So, and I appreciate all the work you've done for us here on Queer Voices to bring queer music. And what do you define as queer music?
Music by GOBT artists. I have a bias towards music that's lyrically gay, but that's not a deal breaker.
So if it's just gay sounding, but they're straight?
No.
It's written by
lyrically
gays?
It could be by a straight artist, but have gay subject matter.
Okay.
There are straight artists singing about gay marriage.
Got it.
Okay. And you especially try to highlight the stuff that isn't commercially...
Independent artists. You really won't hear Elton John, George Michael, Melissa Etheridge much on my shows.
Because they have other outlets.
They get the word out, but the other folks need help.
You find the little gay treasures. And
absolutely, and there's a lot there.
Did you want to talk about something tonight?
I did. I brought a little bit of music. I don't know if we have time for two songs tonight, but we're going to start out with one by Ann Reed. She's been making music for 25 years, has quite a following. She'll be in town next Saturday night for a house concert. I love house concerts. Those are so intimate. I recommend, the directions are kind of complicated. Just go to her website, annreed.com, to find out the where and the when and all that. Next Saturday night, the same night, another lesbian artist, a newer artist named Julie Schurr, S-C-H-U-R-R, will be at Big Daddy's Sports Bar in Spring, my neck of the woods. And I've not heard this this woman live, but I understand she's very funny.
How do you spell Ann Reed?
Ann-A-N-N-R-E-E-D.
R-E-E-D. Okay.
Yes, dot com.
Okay.
And Julie Schurr, Julie, S-C-H-U-R-R.com. Both the same night.
Let's go for it.
Well, there you were, here you are. You kind of wondered if you'd get this far. Hello, fate, so long deferred. Life goes by like the shadow of a bird on a wide, wide window looking over a map drawn on your face. Horizon so close, you could paint it if you tried. Up late, time gets squishy when there's less of it to waste. Favorite dream, never try. Smacks you in the head like a bully passing by down a narrow hallway gallery of the memories that you frame. The objects in the mirror are closer than they seem. It's not some faraway place. A big old rock canyon wall, edge of a cliff, not pretty at all. Take a step, close your eyes, you might learn to fly. Dusty trunk, hefty pack, easier to see if it isn't on your back. A dizzy bridge, clear to cross. Might feel better if the heavy stuff is tossed. There's a key, that's the lock of your childhood home, but the rooms are rearranged. Bruised but aware, while you're tripping on the chairs, it's not some faraway place. A big old rock canyon wall, edge of a cliff, not pretty at all. Take a step, close your eyes, you might learn. Did you get this far? Hello, fate, so long deferred. Life goes by like the shadow of a bird on a wide, wide window looking over a map drawn on your face. Horizon so close, you could paint it if you try. It's not some faraway place.
It's not far, not so far.
This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices, and that was Ann Reed from her latest album, Where the Earth is Round.
This is Queer Voices.
Now, just in case you're looking at your calendars, it is not the first Monday of the month. Usually, that is the time when we talk to David Elliott, but being that he was, I guess, on a trip somewhere, that he will be, he's calling in again right now. As he calls in, we will be doing his segment this week because he wasn't available last week. And last week we sort of did a few other things. So with us on the line now is David Elliott calling in from Washington. Good evening, David.
Hello, Jack. How are you?
Good evening.
Good evening. Is this Jennifer we have in the studio?
Yes, it is.
Great. Well, you know what? We have had one heck of a cold front here in Washington, D.C., and I think that y'all have had an equally bad cold front last week, although I think it's, lessening a little bit right now, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Yeah, tonight will be the last night that it's below freezing for the first time in 7 days.
Well, and, you know, Jack and Jennifer, you know what? We also have a cold front across the United States in terms of the Democratic Party and President Obama.
Yes,
talk about that.
Well, you know, looking ahead in the year 2010, there are a couple of theories about what's going to happen politically. And I'm going to offer up each of those theories, and then I'm going to offer up my own, which is a little bit different from the prevailing theories. The first theory is that Democrats are going to suffer immeasurably at the polls this year.
Oh, which is what all the talking heads are saying now.
That's what everybody is saying. That's what everybody is saying. There's even a chance that the Democrats could lose control of the U.S. House of Representatives.
Now, that is scary.
Yeah. Another theory is that it's going to be more of a status quo year because the Republican Party has not really united. Has not come together, and so you know we're not really going to see a situation where Democrats are going to lose 41 seats in the House, which is what they would have to lose in order to lose control of the House of Representatives. That's the other theory. Here is my theory, and I want to start out by talking to you a little bit about some polling information that I just got on my desk today. There's something called the generic congressional ballot. If you're a voter, would you favor a Democrat or Republican as your member of Congress? Well, overall, Democrats are winning this battle by 3 percentage points. And, you know, out in the West, we're winning it by 3 percentage points. In the Midwest, we're winning it by 5 percentage points. But get this. In the Northeast, Democrats are beating Republicans on the generic congressional ballot by 51 percentage points. And yet in the South, Republicans are beating Democrats on the generic congressional ballot by 33 percentage points.
Wow.
So what does this mean?
Yeah, what does that show us?
Well, what it shows us, Jack and Jennifer, is that as we go through 2010, we are going to have an increasingly divided country, an incredibly divided country. In fact, this is going to be almost like the Civil War, and I'm not joking when I say that, where every contested seat in the South is going to be won by Republicans, every contested seat in the North is going to be won by Democrats. Now, what does this mean going forward? I want to seriously talk about this, because let's look at the last four serious Democratic presidents of the United States.
Okay.
I'm talking FDR. I'm talking LBJ. I'm talking Jimmy Carter. I'm talking Bill Clinton. And then we're wondering, well, where does Harry Truman fit in with that? And where does Barack Obama fit in? Let's talk about LBJ and FDR. These are two presidents who presided over incredibly, incredibly progressive changes in American history. FDR, we saw the beginning of Social Security. We saw the New Deal. LBJ, we saw the Great Society. We saw passage of important civil rights legislation. What these two presidents had in common is that they had movements behind them. What do I mean by movements? Well, LBJ, you had mass organizations of farmers. You had people who stood up to block home foreclosures, sometimes at gunpoint. You had general strikes that shut down entire cities. You had unions that seized factories. You had really progressive, strong forces on the ground that just demanded progressive change and forced FDR to make those changes. Under LBJ, well, you had the civil rights movement. You had people like Martin Luther King Jr. and James Farmer. You had people on the street demanding civil rights. You had, you know, people, you know, arguing against the Vietnam War. Not that that really did all that well under LBJ, I grant you. So how do you contrast that with Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton? And what lessons can we take from that to look ahead to what Obama is going to be looking at over the next year or so? Well, under Bill Clinton and under Jimmy Carter, really didn't have progressive movements. And indeed, we had Democratic presidents who disappointed us. For example, while Carter and Clinton could both point to some progressive legislation enacted during their terms, some of their most significant achievements, deregulation of transportation, consolidation and deregulation of finance, abolition of welfare, enactment of trade agreements that were anti-labor, actually eroded the economic security that FDR and LBJ had fought for. And so we're looking at now, what are we going to look for ahead in 2010? And Jack and Jennifer, I'm telling you, we have something going for us.
What is it that, because that's painting somewhat of a gloomy picture up until this point. What do we got going for us?
Organizing for America. Now, you heard of them about a year ago. After Obama was sworn into office, he had a email list of 13 million people.
Right.
And we didn't hear very much from them.
Haven't heard much here recently either.
Right. But when you look at all of the fights that Obama has fought for, the Recovery Act, the health care battle, the nomination of Sonia Sotomayor, the battle for health care, which is ongoing, you can see that we are still fighting, and it's not as clear, it's not as easy as it was when Obama was running for election. You know, let's talk about the difference between a campaign for election and a campaign to pass legislation. On a campaign, you measure success by winning elections and by doing it in a way that leaves more behind you than when you started. You know, the metrics of success are clear. Win more votes. And you have an end date, election date. When you're fighting for legislation, as we're doing right now with health care reform, it's not so clear. You know, winning is a little bit messier. It's a little bit more ambiguous than, you know, tallying election results, you know, and having sort of the end game, you know, election day. Do you win? Do you lose? And so that's kind of a more difficult metric. You know, healthcare right now, it's going to take us another 3 or 4 more weeks before we get healthcare passed. By that time, we're going to get it to President Obama's desk. But in the end, we're going to be talking about the differences between the House bill and the Senate bill. You know,
yes.
The pros and cons of this version versus this, the Southern version. And the media is going to be really obsessing on that instead of talking about, oh, my God, what do people actually get out of health care reform? You know, well, they get insurance companies aren't going to disqualify people because of pre-existing conditions. They're not going to cap people's benefits. They're not going to be able to say, oh, you know, we're going to do rescissions, which is a fancy way of saying you didn't tell us everything before that you should have told us, so we're going to deny you this benefit. So it's really difficult in terms of, you know, comparing the campaign fight versus the legislative fight. So going forward in 2010, what we're going to have to look at is, are Democrats, is President Obama going to be able to promise to the American people the change that all of us campaigned for, all of us fought for? Or are we going to sit back a little bit and, you know, let the Republican Party, which some people have called the party of no, say, well, no, you know, Democrats are trying to do too much right now, too quickly, and it's not going to work. So, you know, I don't know if I'm articulating this clearly, because it's going into the 2010 campaign, it's a really difficult dynamic that we're looking at. But what we're looking at is, if we don't do this in 2010, we are going to experience the failure of progressives moving forward in the next 2, 4, 8 years to really make a difference in our society.
Right, and so much is dependent on that, including the redistricting, which is very important.
Sure, and that will come after the November elections, right? And that's going to be a big thing in Texas, because Texas is going to be picking up 1 seat or 2 seats, if I'm not mistaken.
Probably 2 or 3, but more likely 2.
We know there'll probably be 2 at this point, but possibly even 3, depending on the numbers. David?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. But that's what we're expecting, one here in the Houston area and one up in the Dallas area.
And, you know, 2010 is an incredibly important election year for Texas, because obviously you've got a Senate seat and you've got the gubernatorial race and other statewide races. But, you know, it's going to be a very, very difficult election. Electoral environment for Texas in 2010.
Right. And the Texas House is like, what, two, three members, five members from...
A switch of three members would give the House to the Democrats here in Texas.
And, you know, it's tough. We're looking at, in suburban Virginia right now, there's a state Senate race that's going to be decided on Tuesday. And you might be asking yourselves, why would our listeners, you know, Queer Voices in Houston, Texas, care about a state Senate race in Virginia? But, you know, people across the country are looking at it because it's a swing district in the Washington, D.C. suburbs. And they're looking at it for the same reason that they're looking at the U.S. Senate special runoff next Tuesday, a week and a half from now. Actually, 15 days from now, in Massachusetts, where the Republican candidate is polling very, very strong and could actually, although I'm not predicting this, upset the Democrat. So it is a very tough time right now in terms of electoral politics and, you know, sort of the national landscape that we're looking at. Democrats aren't polling very well at all. People are concerned about unemployment. They're concerned about possibly the Obama administration trying to do too much too quickly. And that's the landscape that we're looking at. It's very, very difficult.
Well, this is all very interesting, and I don't think, I think this has all sort of been known that it's been really, really tough. The guns have been after Obama to be able to make any changes, and they don't even have an actual answer for what they're seeking.
Well, and Jack, you know, that's why we call the Republican Party so often right now the party of no. They are very effectively organizing to oppose the Obama agenda, but they're not out there.
Well, for my observation is, and use the football metaphor since it's that time of season, is that this is like the goal line stand for the Republicans. They know that if they've got to do everything to keep Obama from getting his agenda, even the first part of it, because if they do, they know that there'll be a sweep along the way. It won't be just one thing. There'll be more to it.
Well, and that's exactly what South Carolina Senator Jim DeMint said, 6 months ago, 9 months ago, when he said, we have to defeat Obama on health care, that will be his Waterloo. And that's pretty close to being DeMint's words. And so that's why we have to keep marching forward. And actually, I'm very, very pleased to announce that in about 3 weeks' time, we will have a health care bill on President Obama's desk, and he will be signing it. And then we can move on to jobs and immigration and some other issues.
What's the status on ENDA?
That is...
You have 20 seconds to give me an update.
bottom line, it's not moving yet. We're going to see... We're going to get gay and lesbian and bisexual and transgender people serving in the military before we get ENDA.
Well, David, thank you for joining us this evening. And what do you do for your day job?
Well, for my day job, I am the communications director for U.S. Action and a new coalition called Jobs for America Now. You can see our website at jobs4americanow.org.
David, thank you for joining us. David Elliott's here usually on the first Monday of every month, giving us sort of a national overview so that we know what's going on up in Washington and how it affects the rest of the country. You're listening to Queer Voices.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Linda Birch.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending January 9th, 2010. Lawmakers in Portugal, by a vote of 125-99, approved a marriage equality bill on January 8th. It could make the heavily Roman Catholic country the sixth in Europe to open civil matrimony to gay and lesbian couples, joining the Netherlands, Belgium, Spain, Norway, and Sweden. Passage was expected because the party of Socialist Prime Minister José Sócrates, who'd promised marriage equality during his campaign, has strong representation in Parliament. The measure also enjoyed support from other progressive minority parties. "This law rights a wrong," Sócrates said in a speech to lawmakers, "and it would end pointless suffering." Equality advocates applauded from the galleries, hugged and kissed outside the building, drank champagne, and ate wedding cake. Right-wing parties had gathered more than 90,000 signatures on a petition seeking a national referendum on the issue, but lawmakers rejected that effort. Most reports said that President Aníbal Silva, though politically conservative, is likely to sign the bill. His ratification would allow the first same-gender marriage ceremonies to take place in April, a month before Pope Benedict XVI makes an official visit to Portugal. A proposal from the Left Bloc and Green Party to grant adoption rights to lesbian and gay couples was rejected, however. Activists vowed to continue the fight for parental rights.
The government of New South Wales has also rejected adoptions equality, even though a parliamentary committee's inquiry in the Australian state found that opening adoption to same-gender couples would ensure the best interests of children. Linda Burney, the government's Minister for Community Services, claimed that there was insufficient community support to justify new legislation on the topic. She said the committee members couldn't reach a consensus in favor of a law change. "We've taken the view that the community is so polarized," she added, "that they're not ready for us to move towards same-sex adoption." James McDougall, director of the National Children's and Youth Law Center, said his organization supported the law's expansion. He said they told the parliamentary inquiry that children, particularly children of families without legal recognition, wanted this change. Kelly McDonald of the Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby called the decision extremely disappointing. If the government's primary concern was the interest of the children, it would rectify the discrimination of the NSW Adoption Act, she said. "I'm not sure what more can be done."
Meanwhile, while U.S. activists knew it was a long shot, the New Jersey State Senate rejected a marriage equality bill this week by a vote of 20-14. Momentum to bring the measure to a vote accelerated following the failure in November of Democratic Governor John Corzine's re-election bid. He'd promised to sign the bill. Republican Chris Christie, who takes office on January 19th, said he'd veto the measure. And in fact, Christie has supported a constitutional amendment to ban marriage equality. New Jersey's LGBT rights group, Garden State Equality, understandably expressed disappointment. Their statement underscored the state Supreme Court's equality ruling in 2006. That decision ordered the legislature to open marriage to lesbian and gay couples or to create another structure equivalent to marriage. There's been considerable testimony in the legislature and elsewhere that the state's current civil unions law has failed to establish genuine equality and has therefore failed to comply with the High Court's order. Executive Director Kevin Cathcart of the national LGBT advocacy group Lambda Legal wrote that there is enormous, heartbreaking evidence that civil unions are not equal to marriage, and we will be going back to the courts in New Jersey to fight for equality. Too many families are at risk. We cannot wait any longer. A marriage equality bill also failed in the New York state legislature late last year, and voters in Maine overturned a law in November to open civil marriage to same-gender couples that had been passed in the legislature and signed by the governor. A federal court case challenging the constitutionality of California's Proposition 8 begins in the coming week. A U.S. appeals court this week upheld the trial judge's ruling to allow the recording and posting of the proceedings on YouTube. Gay and lesbian couples can legally wed in Massachusetts, Connecticut, Vermont, Iowa, and New Hampshire, and, barring congressional or judicial intervention, they will soon be able to marry in the District of Columbia.
Same-gender couples can't legally marry in Rhode Island, but state lawmakers this week overrode the veto of conservative Republican Governor Don Ciccieri of a bill to allow lesbians and gay men to plan the funerals of their deceased partners. Ciccieri warned in his veto message following the near-unanimous passage of the measure, which included lawmakers in his own party, that the bill represented the incremental erosion of the principles surrounding traditional marriage. Mark Goldberg became a leading activist for the legislation after struggling for 5 weeks to claim the body of his partner of 17 years, Ron Hanby, who died in October 2008.
The state medical examiner would not release Hanvey's body to Goldberg because they were not married or family related, even though the couple had wills and other legal documents attesting to their relationship. To qualify for funeral planning rights, which applies to both same-gender and unmarried heterosexual couples, the survivor must be at least 18 years of age and the couple must have lived together for at least 1 year. He or she must present proof that the couple was financially interdependent, such as joint property ownership or a shared bank account.
But well-known Honduran gay activist Walter Troches was murdered in a mid-December drive-by shooting in Tegucigalpa. The 27-year-old activist was a member of the resistance movement against June's military coup d'etat in the Central American country. Troches had been documenting and publicizing homophobic killings and crimes believed to have been committed by the forces behind the coup, as well as general human rights violations committed during anti-coup protest marches. He had been kidnapped earlier that month, beaten, interrogated about the resistance, threatened with death, and told to cease his activism. The four kidnappers, from whom he'd escaped after several hours, wore hoods and drove a truck without license plates. Multiple sources called them government agents, but police officials denied any involvement. Human Rights Watch called Troches' murder part of a pattern of violence against LGBT people in Honduras that seems to have accelerated in the turbulent months since the June 28th coup. Amnesty International demanded an immediate and thorough investigation. The International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission said that Troches' death was the 16th known murder in the Honduran LGBT community since the military coup.
The LGBT group Inclusive Foundation was raided by police in Tbilisi, Georgia in mid-December, and the organization's leader, Peyata Sabalishvili, was jailed for 2 weeks. Queer activists in Western Europe say that group members remain under surveillance and that the organization's phones are tapped. According to their reports, the raiding officers did not wear uniforms, identify themselves, produce a search warrant, or explain the raid. They confiscated cell phones and denounced members of the group's women's club, who were meeting at the time, as perverts, sick people, and Satanists. Inclusive Foundation leaders say that they're constantly being followed by cars full of men without uniforms, and that one such car is permanently stationed outside the entrance to the house of one of the staff members.
Here's the latest in our virtually weekly updates about proposed Kill the Gays legislation in the East African nation of Uganda. Sponsoring MP David Bahati said on January 8th that he would not withdraw the bill, despite some calls from government officials to at least ease some of the harshest provisions. The measure imposes the death penalty in some cases for private, consensual, adult homosexual acts. It also mandates life behind bars for others, possibly including those charged with simply touching a member of the same gender with homosexual intent, and lengthy prison terms for anyone who supports gay rights or fails to report a suspected gay person to the police for prosecution. Following weeks of international condemnation, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni and his ethics minister James Nsaba Buturo said earlier in the week that the death penalty should be replaced by so-called rehabilitation, though they haven't objected to any other parts of the bill. "We have our children in schools to protect against being recruited into homosexuality," Bahati said. "The process of legislating a law to protect our children against homosexuality and defending our family values must go on." The bill is reportedly now scheduled for debate in Parliament in late February or early March.
And finally, Amnesty International joined other global human rights groups this week to call for the unconditional release of Stephen Manjeza and Tuwange Shimbulanga, a gay couple who were jailed in late December after hosting a well-attended engagement party in Malawi's largest city, Blantyre. Authorities had scheduled a medical examination of the men this week to determine whether or not they'd engaged in unnatural practices between males, which is punishable by up to 14 years in prison in the southern African country. At last report, the government had not yet found a so-called expert to do so, and the men remained in a Malawi jail whose conditions are believed to be among the worst in the world. Amnesty called the men prisoners of conscience and said that the invasive medical testing constitutes torture. Gift Trepens, the executive director of a Malawi human rights group, the Center for the Development of People, has publicly supported the couple. He's reportedly being sought by police for pornographic materials used by the center to educate gay men about HIV. An administrator for the group, Bunko Kamba, was arrested this week on the same charge.
That's News Wrap for the week ending January 9th, 2010. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's news wrap online at www.thiswayout.org.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Linda Birch.
And I'm Rick Watts.
We'll get all shook up about Elvis and learn how homophobic teachers are being challenged in Minnesota later in the program. But first, U.S. transgenders made news this week, and no one reported it better than MSNBC's Rachel Maddow.
A big controversy tonight over a nomination to the Commerce Department. That's right, something going on at the always exciting Commerce Department has at least one social conservative group in a real tizzy. President Obama nominated this woman, Amanda Simpson, to serve as senior technical advisor in the Commerce Department. She started that gig today. She got this job monitoring the export of U.S. weapons technology because she's worked in that industry for 3 decades, most recently at Raytheon. She also has degrees in physics, engineering, and business. She was a Clinton delegate during the 2008 campaign. She once ran for Arizona's House of Representatives as a Democrat. She secured the party nomination, but she lost in the general election. In other words, this woman has a resume designed for this job. Amanda Simpson is also transgender. Cue the panicked press releases from the right in 3, 2. A spokesperson for Focus on the Family said, quote, "This appointment of a male-to-female transgender activist to a high-level Commerce Department position appears to be payback to President Obama's far-left base for their political support." We contacted Mara Kiesling of the National Center for Transgender Equality today, and she told us that actually, while President Obama is the first president to appoint transgender people to his administration, Amanda Simpson is not the first. A transgender man is already working at the Labor Department. Everybody panic! The only reason this second appointment got any attention at all from the national media and organizations like Focus on Your Own Darn Family is that the National Center for Transgender Equality put out a press release saying, hey, check it out, our former board member is going to work in D.C. Isn't that neat? So while Ms. Simpson is not the first openly trans appointee, she is also probably not the last. Best of luck to Amanda Simpson and overseeing the whole export of U.S. weapons technology thing. And good luck to the religious right in arguing that a person with 3 decades of vital, pertinent experience and degrees in physics, engineering, and business isn't qualified to do this job. And follow-up alert, good news for any other transgender people who are ostentatiously qualified for jobs with the federal government. The Obama administration has quietly and without a ticker tape parade changed language on the federal jobs website to reflect that employment discrimination on the basis of gender identity is not allowed. The new rule applies only to federal jobs, of course, but since the federal government is the country's largest employer, this move will have some real impact, much to the chagrin of the Family Research Council, who put out a strong statement condemning the rule change, endorsing discrimination, and saying that they think that transgender people should just be changed through magical Family Research Council-approved therapy. Good luck with that, Family Research Council. Good luck. I don't mean that.
You can watch The Rachel Maddow Show online at www.msnbc.com.
Well, bless my soul, what's wrong with me? I'm itching like a man on a fuzzy tree. My friends say I'm acting wild as a bug. I'm in love. I'm all shook up.
Elvis Presley would have been 75 years old on January 8th. This Way Out commentator Janet Mason gets all shook up over a maybe gay, or at least not entirely straight, metaphysical interpretation of the King of Rock and Roll by queer surrealist poet C.A. Conrad.
In full disclosure, I have to admit to never being a fan of Elvis. He died in 1977, and even though I was 18 that year, I hardly noticed that he had departed. Elvis was part of the working class landscape that I was intent on leaving behind. By contrast, my best friend's family, most of them were or would become steel workers, worshipped the king and even traveled to Memphis to pay homage. I had little to no interest then, but I eventually did escape, only to come back full circle to Elvis. I certainly never thought that I would come to associate Elvis with enlightenment or anything gay, for that matter. But this is exactly what happened to me through the writings and experiences of gay surrealist poet C.A. Conrad, author of the Advanced Elvis Course, published in 2009 by Soft Skull Press. C.A. writes about his journey to Graceland, where devotees from all over the world gather at the gates each morning singing "How Great Thou Art" to Elvis. Conrad is completely enchanted with the king, but he is not saying that Elvis was gay, only that he doesn't think Elvis was entirely straight. In writing about a group of women that he becomes friendly with in Memphis, Conrad responds to a question with, "More important than being a vegetarian, though, is I'm gay, and gay people don't eat chicken." And then posing the question, "Did Elvis eat chicken?" And then asking, "Are you sure?" Beyond his spiritual epiphanies and poetic adventures of what sex would be like with Elvis in the king's bedroom in Graceland, he chronicles the collective experience of Elvis and the resonance with his own history. He writes about his second grade teacher having a ceramic Elvis head planter. Sometime during the third grade, it seemed appropriate to pay a visit to my old second grade classroom to show them what it looked like to be a sophisticated third grader. Second grade was far behind me now, but I was willing to make an appearance, maybe give a little guest speech or take questions if necessary. Class had not started. Everyone was talking and pulling out their homework. The Elvis head planter was still at the edge of the desk, ivy hair by this time spilling over the sides, almost to the floor. With his beautiful, unanticipated long hair, Elvis resembled a good man I was beginning to hear about, a man who used to live in the desert with 12 other good men, a man of magic and power who had come to rescue us all from the narrow, rigid world, like the world before rock and roll. In snatches of a conversation between himself and Gloria, another Elvis fan who he meets in Graceland, Conrad observes, "Very few ever sang both rock and roll and gospel with such matched intensity. His message says love of God and brotherhood are the same, and love of any kind can never be wrong." To which Gloria replies, "Elvis once said, if you hate another human being, you're hating part of yourself. So I always figure it's got to be the same. If you love another human being, you're loving part of yourself." Perhaps it's true that Elvis wasn't entirely straight. When I mentioned this theory to a performer friend of mine, she said it makes sense that he was bisexual because he was so over the top sexually for his time. In the Advanced Elvis Course, Conrad notes that he sees Elvis everywhere and everyone. It is possible that Elvis, the memory of Elvis, the all shook up, hip gyrating, fried peanut butter, banana eating, American myth Elvis, lives inside each of us. And of course, by deduction, this means that there's something of a gay person deep down inside of everyone, whether they want to admit it or not. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
Hi, this is John Cameron Mitchell, the writer-director of Hedwig and the Angry Inch and Short Bus. And you're listening to This Way Out, the international weekly radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
We reported last year on the firestorm in the U.S. state of Minnesota over the homophobic harassment by two teachers of a perceived-to-be gay student, which led to a lawsuit and an out-of-court settlement by the school district. As has so often happened in queer history, and Anita Bryant's 1977 crusade against gay rights may be the most obvious template, attacks on sexual minorities often lead to increased LGBT activism. This Way Out, Minneapolis-St. Paul correspondents Dixie Trichel and John Townsend spoke recently with Katrina Plotz and Adam Fairbanks about the latest cause and effect example.
Can you fill us in, just for people who may not know about this case, tell us a little bit about who it involved and what happened.
It was this student, Alex Merritt. He was a
junior at the time.
at the Secondary Technical Education Program, mm-hmm. which is a high school in the Anoka-Hennepin School District. And two of his teachers, Diane Cleveland, who was a social studies teacher, and Walter Filson, who was a law enforcement teacher.
Wow.
Yeah. They had this running joke, I guess, that it was funny and fun to harass him and make fun of him because they thought he was gay.
They ridiculed him and harassed him on a daily basis for a few months before his mom pulled him out of school and moved him to another school district. Alex Merritt's mother, she filed a complaint with the Minnesota Department of Human Rights, and they found through their investigation that they were guilty of this, and they forced the school district to pay $25,000 to Alex and his family for mm-hmm. what happened. And we started a Facebook group of community outrage to really, you know, try to get some organization, and we protested and confronted the school district about what happened to him.
And so it was really disturbing to hear about this and to also find out that these teachers had basically not been held accountable at mm-hmm. all for what they did.
And when I heard that, that's when I got so mad, and I said to a friend of mine, we need to start a Facebook group mm-hmm. of outrage. And so we started this group called Tell Anoka-Hennepin School District to Fire Anti-Gay Teachers.
You also confronted the school board. Tell us about that.
In this case, because it was an issue regarding sexual orientation, they mm-hmm. seem much more willing to make excuses or explain it away isn't acceptable to me or to, you know, any of the people who are so upset about this. And so we looked into it more. And what's interesting is that on Anoka-Hennepin's own website, they have under teacher obligations and conduct, mm-hmm. they talk about the Minnesota Board of Teaching Code of Ethics
yes.
for teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was pretty interesting to read that, because ethic number one is teachers must educate students in a non-discriminatory manner. Ethic number two is about teachers must make every effort to protect students from conditions harmful to health and safety. You know, in this case, they actively created conditions
right.
that were harmful
right.
to health and safety. So, yeah, we had these ethics written out on some of the signs that we brought to the school board meeting, and then we encouraged people to not just take the district's word that this was being handled, but to actually file official complaints
mm-hmm.
with the Minnesota Board of Teaching, who is hopefully conducting an investigation, because I sent in a complaint, and I know
Adam did,
and several people did, and they actually have the authority to investigate situations like mm-hmm. this and issue disciplinary action of their own, which
right.
could include suspending or revoking a teacher's mm-hmm. license.
Oh, and something else, Alex Merritt is not gay, he's straight.
People were outraged. They were really mad about what happened, mostly through the LGBT community. A lot of Alex's friends had contacted me since I was the administrator and mm-hmm. really thanked me. His mom did, his brother did, you know, he did.
Mm-hmm.
Thanked me for what we were doing. From all of the stuff that happened, we formed a working group of us that have been meeting regularly. We're starting a GLSEN Minnesota chapter, and
mm-hmm.
GLSEN Minnesota really focuses on mm-hmm. making sure that people feel like they have the right to stand up and say no to discrimination against LGBT harassment.
Right.
Helping people to be aware of anti-gay language in the classroom. So we're really working on trying to improve the school climate, not just Anoka-Hennepin, but
right.
the entire state.
Right, yeah. This is an issue that applies to all harassment that's going on around the world.
This is something that I included in my complaint that I sent to the Board of Teaching, is that this kind of harassment has life and death consequences.
Mm-hmm, right.
And just this
exactly.
past year, there were two 11-year-old kids who killed themselves because they were the targets of ongoing bullying and harassment. And there's a statistic from a youth risk survey from 2006 that gay teens are up to 4 times more likely to commit suicide
mm-hmm.
than teens as a whole. And I think a lot of that probably has to do with the fact that they're much more likely to experience teasing and taunting.
Well, and what's worse is when it happens from adults, that's the that's who are in positions of authority and supposed education and influence.
I think what's really interesting to see is what kinds of networking and long-term organizing can come out of something like this, which was, of course, very unfortunate. But it's been really interesting and uplifting to see the way that people in the community have responded through the Facebook group and people coming out to the events that we had, the school board meeting, and then we also had an event at a back-to-school night open house at the high school where this happened. Because right now, their policy is that staff are required to remain neutral on issues of sexual orientation. They're basically not supposed to talk about it, and they cannot talk about it as something that is positive or healthy or normal.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Right. Yeah, like pretend it's invisible.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to get that policy changed. We want to get more training for staff in the district. There's going to be a GLBT staff organization, and then they want there to be some more networking between the gay straight alliance groups that do exist at schools within the district. So that's specifically some of the work that's being done. But then there's also the GLSEN chapter, which is going to be a statewide thing.
I really wanted the statewide thing because I really care about what happened to Alex Marin. I feel really bad about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to make sure that this doesn't happen in the school district that I live in. There's a lot of collaboration that could happen and a lot of work that could be done. Two things that we want to focus on is training educators about being inclusive and sensitive to LGBT issues. And we also want to raise awareness when students are treated unfairly because of their sexual orientation or gender expression.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to do that through events like we did, like in the media. And we want to be organized and be able to go out there and say, this is not okay.
Minnesota Safe School activists Adam Fairbanks and Katrina Plotz spoke with our correspondents John Townsend and Dixie Trichel in Minneapolis, St. Paul. For more information about the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, or GLSEN, log on to www.glsen.org. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Linda Birch, Janet Mason, John Cameron Mitchell, and Dixie Trichel and John Townsend contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is only made possible by our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, listen to our podcasts, read this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on Free Radio Santa Cruz, California, 4CCR, Cairns, Queensland, KVSC, St. Cloud, Minnesota, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
On behalf of KPFT, thank you for your support this past year. In 2010, KPFT celebrates our 40th birthday, and we expect even greater things in this year ahead. Please take a moment to think of how much you relied on KPFT. KPFT has hosted legendary live studio performances.
This is Vikram Singh.
Living on the road, my friend.
I'm Lyle Lovett, and you're on Houston's 90.1.
And I've been telling these fellas in the band, I said, you ain't seen no party until we get to Houston.
In honor of KPFT's 40th birthday, please make a tax-deductible contribution today. Every donation helps. Visit us online at kpft.org or call 713-526-4000 to support KPFT, to shorten our on-air pledge drives, to keep us growing. We look forward to serving you throughout KPFT's 40th birthday year here in 2010. And thanks for listening to KPFT Houston.
Pacifica is listener-sponsored radio.
What does that mean?
Listener sponsorship is an answer to the practical problem of getting better radio programs and keeping them.
A focus on advertisers or the mass audience accounts for the mediocrity of corporate radio.
When listeners support the radio they enjoy, their choices become better.
Listener sponsorship takes control of your radio out of the hands of companies and into the hands of the community.
But maintaining this sort of radio requires you.
Your pledge of support keeps KPFT on the air as a vital community resource.
So call our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314, to become a member today.
You can even go online at kpft.org to make your pledge.
Your pledge is essential to keep listener sponsorship viable for generations to come.
So call 713-526-4000 to support KPFT.
This is commercial-free listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio.
KPFT, Houston.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites, MySpace and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. On Facebook, for example, you can connect to KPFT as a friend, join our fan page, and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley to Facebook users. On MySpace, KPFT provides event videos, updates, and a lot more. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. On MySpace, visit myspace.com/KPFT Houston. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio 90.1 KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
This is Christopher Dolman, and you're listening to Out Radio with J.B. Doyle.
If I want to kiss you, I'll no longer hide behind the night. I ain't scared of stares from strangers out in broad daylight. I am done with all these covert kisses stolen sight just when we can. I'm gonna make my man my missus, put a ring on his left hand. How long, brother of mine, it's a matter of time. How long, oh, and this is love, yeah, this is love. This is love, yeah, this is love.
You can marry a millionaire on a TV show, get hitched in Vegas to some bitch you barely know. Me and my love have spent some 7 years just building this home that we made. Still our love is second class, our union is still renegade. How long, brother of mine, it's a matter of time. How long? Oh, and this is love. Yeah, this is love. And this is love. Yeah, this is love.
I don't bother your love. Don't bother your love. I 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 don't bother your love. How long?
brother of mine. It's a matter of time. Yes, how's on? Oh.
Welcome to Out Radio, and I'm J.D. Doyle. This is the debut edition, and it's a companion show to Queer Music Heritage. Like QMH, it'll be a monthly show of at least 1 hour, probably more, and it'll be internet-based with its own domain, logically at www.outradio.com. Since Queer Music Heritage, by definition, is more of a history show, it did not give me the opportunities to play enough of the terrific new music I get by gay, lesbian, bi, and trans artists. January is also my 10th anniversary of doing QMH, and recently I've been doing a Best of the Year show there. But I've decided, as it's all about new music, that show more rightly belongs on Out Radio. But I much encourage you to check out my QMH January show, where I get to share an in-depth interview with Holly Neer, one of the icons of the women's music movement. Okay, on to this show. During the year, I get to hear a large number of new CDs by GLBT artists, so it is indeed difficult to narrow things down to the music that'll fit into an hour show. So yes, this is a very, very subjective Best of the Year list. I'm honoring 12 albums and 2 MP3 singles from the last year, and started out with one of the singles. It's called Anthem, and is by Christopher Dahlman. I just love his voice and adored his debut album, Race the Light, from 2004, and have been eagerly awaiting new music from him. This fall, he released 2 CD EPs and the song you heard, the single called Anthem. And there are several songs on this show that take an anthem quality to them, including the next one. It's by New York City artist Athena Reich, and it's from her album Little Girl Dreams. And the song is Love is Love.
We all know love is patient. We all know love is kind. No one tells you love is crazy and can catch you from behind. They say one man, one woman, it's unnatural to love your own. But I've been with boys, I've been with girls, and love is ruled by love alone. Love is ruled by love alone. This abstract work of art, you can only find its beauty painting with your broken heart. And if you stay wide open to everything that it could be, it might grace you with its presence. Love don't make no guarantees. Love don't make no guarantees.
Love is love. straight, thin, or fat, or when love is the answer. Got no more freedom, got the rich, poor, what's it do you? Tall, short, you see right through you. When you live in fear, break me to feel. Get the black, white, doesn't matter. Gay, straight, thin, or fat, or when love is the answer. Got no more freedom, got the rich, poor, what's it do you? Tall, short, you see right through. Tall, short, see right through you. When we're living here, bring me to tears, get love.
Following Athena Reich and Love is Love was Got Love, the title track from the latest album by Josh Zuckerman. This is Josh's third album. He released one called Totally New Sensation in 2002 and followed up with Out From Under in 2006, and I recommend them all. Out of the Washington, D.C. area is Tom Goss. Since his debut album in 2006, he's released two more, with the latest called Back to Love. He's a very hard-working artist. I follow him on Facebook, and it seems he is always touring somewhere. He found time to issue a video for one of my favorite songs on the album, and it's a wonderful video. From Tom Goss, here is Till the End, and he'll be followed by a humorous song from a Canadian artist.
Taking it easy, just like a Sunday afternoon. You're driving me crazy, like you always seem to do. So I call you lazy, and you snooze a day away. Sinking swiftly through those dreams of bittersweet. Take your fears and you can lay them at my feet. 'Cause I swear that I'm here till the end. Even if it's not the same as what your God says, you see, he truly is to blame for what is nonsense. 'Cause God is love and love is good. Sinking swiftly through those dreams of bittersweet. Take your fears and you can. You do, your eyes are glow now. You see my face, look back at you. It's what we know now. It's for what we've always yearned.
till the end, till the end.
The other night, so I walked down the street to the neighborhood open mic, thinking if I played a couple of tunes, it just might make me feel all right. So I walked up to the bar, put down my guitar, and ordered myself a tea, cause I couldn't afford a beer. And then I sat down and took a look around the place and surveyed all the faces in there. Slamming back a couple of pitchers and a group of teachers in V-neck sweaters planning their next strike. And on the mic was a Kurt Cobain lookalike in Converse shoes singing some grunge love suicide blues. There were some old boys sitting at the bar giving me the stare. They were checking out my hair. And I thought, oh my God, what am I doing in here right now? I really could use that beer. My throat's feeling a little tight and it's getting hot in here. I'm the only dyke at the open mic. I wish I was on that flight tonight. How'd Joni get me out of here? So when Kurt sang his final note, he left the stage to smoke cigarettes and drink himself depressed. And the hostess asked if I'd like to sing a couple of tunes. Well, I guess I didn't have much to lose. So I jumped up on stage, but I bumped into the mic stand and it crash-landed to the floor. And the hostess ran up to help me out as I was fighting off my second round of self-doubt. And I'm the only dyke at the open mic and the mic's down on the floor and I'm already looking for the door, yeah. I'm the only dyke at the open mic. I'm just trying to look cool, but I'm feeling a little bit. Then it took me for what seemed like forever to tune my guitar, and I could hear the old boys at the bar snickering through the darkness, and I'm still thinking, do I really have to go through with this? And then the microphone started feeding back on me, and the sound guy freaked out. And I felt like I was in one of those classic movie scenes, you know, or like the time when Ellen DeGeneres finally came out. And the old boys at the bar had their backs to me now, and Kurt Cobain was getting drunk and loud, and the teachers were getting rowdy and ready to call a union meeting, and me, I was still contemplating leaving. And then I heard someone say, I hope this chick doesn't stick around, cause I've had enough for one day. But then I ripped into my first song, you know, and I blew them all away. The crowd and I'm making them laugh out loud, yeah. I'm the only dyke at the open mic. Well, what do you know? I was winning them over, tunes to a round of whistling and clapping, and as I was packing up my guitar case, one of the boys from the bar came over with a really sheepish look on his face. And I'm thinking, okay, what's this guy gonna say to me? I better get ready. But then he slapped me on the shoulder and he said with a grin, I loved your songs, man. I wish I was a lesbian. Strumming my guitar in this dingy little bar, yeah. I'm the only dyke at the open mic, belting out songs about women feeling good when I'm singing. I'm the only dyke at the open mic, strumming my guitar in this dingy little bar, yeah. I'm the only dyke at the open mic. Some nights I gotta push myself up.
love to listen to the storytelling of Kate Reed. She's out of Vancouver and put out her first CD in 2006 called Coming Alive. And it seems logical that she called her latest, I'm Just Warming Up. From it, you heard her tell about being the only dyke at the open mic. I have a bunch of albums by this next artist, as she's been at this a long time and quite successfully. You'll know who it is as soon as I say that her breakout hit was in 1995 and was called I Kissed a Girl. Of course, I'm talking about Jill Sobule. On her website, she says, that song was a double-edged sword for me. It was perceived as a novelty hit, but on the other hand, it was the first song with an overtly gay topic to be aired on Top 40 radio. I am quite proud of that. People should definitely pay more attention to her music than just that song, as she's an amazing songwriter. On her latest album, California Years, there are a number of very interesting songs, but one that really struck me was the way she could musically evoke the spirit of her song, Where is Bobby Gentry?
One, two, one, two, three.
Again, Jill Sobule, and there's an irony to my having picked this next song I didn't realize until I noticed both artists would be on this show. It seems some pop singer in 2008 also released a song called I Kissed a Girl, attracting, I think, way too much attention, and again, in my opinion, using the gay community to make a lot of money. I'm not even mentioning her name, but Jen Foster was paying attention and thought it would be fun to tell the other side of the story. So I'm bringing you the MP3 single she released called I Didn't Just Kiss Her. Here's Jen Foster.
I didn't just kiss her. We went all the way at night. You never know till you've tried it. I didn't just kiss her. She put it on my tongue and licked it. I think she wishes she could forget it. But you sure seem to love every minute. Oh, I don't know what the problem is. Why she gotta try so hard to keep it all a secret, yeah. A secret, yeah. I didn't just kiss her. We went all the way and she liked it. She likes to think she didn't invite it. He scratches on because she tried to fight it. Oh, I didn't just kiss her. Whispered what she wanted to put in there. Swore that she'd respect me in the morning. But when the sun came up, she left without a warning. Oh, oh, I don't know what the problem is. Why she gotta try so hard to keep it all a secret, yeah. A secret, yeah. She said she only kissed me for the boys' attention. She's trying to blame it on a little too much. But I can testify she knew what she was doing. It was almost like she'd done it all before. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, 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 oh. She's gonna go back to her boyfriend now. Before the questions come up, she's gonna tell him I'm stalking around the clock. Like I'm making a story up. Yeah. Attention. She's trying to blame it on a little too much booze. But I can testify she knew what she was doing. It was almost like she'd done it all before. I didn't just kiss her. No, I didn't just kiss her. I didn't just kiss her. And I'm sure I do miss her. Cause I didn't just kiss her.
In 2007, I did a three-hour special on gay hip-hop, and while that's not a genre I naturally gravitate to, doing that show taught me to appreciate a number of artists new to me. One of them is Andrew Singer, who as an artist calls himself, so say the Elemental Wizard. I find his music fun, catchy, and always interesting, especially on his new album, Master of Fine Arts. Now, since I want to keep the first hour of Out Radio safe for broadcast radio, I could not pick several of the very cool songs I was considering. But I think you'll enjoy this one, called They Call Me.
Oh, and another one. Yeah, and another one. Come on, yeah. And I'm going to say, I'm very crispy, like a creme brulee. Hard with an edge like masa and cheese. There's no running away, cause I'm locking the keys. You be safe enough in assuming I'm harmful. I'm slipping away and I'm losing my marbles. After doing 10 or 20 shows a month for about 3 people apiece, I need a release. It's just that I'm addicted to jumping around like an idiot. I got enough energy to keep the whole city lit. Ultimately, I'm just a really silly kid. At least I'm not lip-syncing like Milli Vanilli did. Like Milli Vanilli did. I hate it when my tapes skip, my DVD doesn't play. Everything is makeshift. My world's collapsing. I'm totally grasping at straws, but I'ma pull through despite my flaws.
They all call me so sane. And they all call me so sane. Having the fun time, grabbing the frisbee, passing, doing
ponder me, sit politely, and ask where the summer went. I got so many acquaintances that the maintenance can cause me to pull a bait and switch. But then again, everybody in the city's got busy lives. If you're sitting at home, then that's so uncivilized. So lean to the side, slap your knee, shake someone's hand, happily make a new friend. I got so excited when I saw you earlier on. Pops, our flirting was nonstop. I probably come off as crazy in love with you. I try to keep it chill, don't wanna be a bugaboo. Do people still say that? For real though, I'm laid back. I just wanna make tracks in the key of A flat.
And they all call me so sane. And they all call me so sane. And I wouldn't ever wanna.
So say the Elemental Wizard. And I was very pleased this year to discover an act calling itself Good Asian Drivers. I just love that name. The act is comprised of songwriter Melissa Lee and transgendered slam poet Kit Yan. As a duo, I love how political their music is, getting into a lot of areas that just need to be put out there. Their album is called Drive Away Home, but it doesn't end there. As a solo act, Melissa Lee also released an album on her own called 2 Seconds Away. And I was very impressed with the bold and thoughtful lyrics, so much so that I'm naming both of these albums to my best of year list. Due to language issues, these are also artists for which I had to choose the songs for broadcast radio carefully. So I encourage you to check out the albums for even more powerful material. Here are Good Asian Drivers and, by herself, Melissa Lee.
Every syllable, every word, and every breath is for you. See, for us, it's late nights in creation with Chinese food, mechs, and guitars. We're playing a dead silence in dive bars while the bartenders take shots alone. We'll make love to microphones so that someone, somewhere, will catch a verse. Overhear us sing freedom songs on the subway while we rehearse for our next show. So that we can tell our daughters to make the same mistakes that we did and dream. Turn her head from the ticker screen and shoot for the movie screen. See, little girl, if you want to, someday you can fight fire with axes or sing songs backed by symphonies to the masses in Central Park that will see past the slant of your eyes and see your beauty shine on an interview with CNN as the new CEO of a tech startup sensation. You can run a bank with the same compensation as the big boys. Start a nonprofit in Maine that brings joy to children with cancer. You can be a modern dancer, a poet, a reverend, a chef, the only female engineer in your office. See all of this and more. Don't let the world shut its doors on you yet, baby girl. Shine on your own. Take time on your own to find that passion in the hollow part of your soul. Make mistakes until you know what you want to try next. See, your life will rebound. You might find your passions at the poetry slam in the basement of the lizard lounge, in the waist-high weeds, barefoot at the organic farm, maybe tattooed on your girlfriend's arm with a Buddha sitting cross-legged on a lily pad. See, this is your path. So go be a mechanic or chairwoman of the board. Win tournaments on your surfboard and be at the top of your drawing, your painting, your acting, and then your calculus class. See, little girl, when they laugh, Melissa is gonna smack them with her guitar. So go far but right back, 'cause we'll still be here and the world. Pomona, juicy, round, and ripe. So go on and write, sing, run, and slam until your pencils break and the speakers blow. 'Cause we'll come watch your show while you show them what you got. So go it until your voice cracks and don't regret not one second.
The 40 different ways we can say goodbye. And she's got a thousand holes in her heart, and she's trying to complete her with a thousand men. And just like a sewer, I stepped right up and attempted to make it all again. And I think there's no other when I am her lover. I can make her gasp and reach for the sky, but I'm just an extra in her film. I'll never be the lead, but I'm sure as I'm gonna try. I could hear the sound of the ice in her drink, and I softly curse the silence, 'cause we've already had way too much time to think. And she tells me that she's in love with this boy. I know that she's lying from her touch, and she can't freaking say that she wants me, 'cause admitting it aloud would hurt too much. And she's got a thousand holes in her heart, and she's trying to complete it with a thousand men. And just like a sewer, I stepped right up and I attempted to make it all again. And I think there's no other when I am her lover. I can make her gasp and reach for the sky, but I'm just an extra in her film. I'll never be the lead, but I'm sure I'm gonna try. She justifies being apart by calling it discipline, but isn't it so much more exciting when it's a sin? But I know she wants me anyway, so I want her to go ahead and take it all, 'cause being polite was never her forte. To make it whole again, and I think there's no other when I am her lover. I can make her gasp and reach for the sky, but I'm just an extra in her film. I'll never be the lead, but I'm sure I'm gonna try.
Good Asian Driver, you heard For Our Daughters, and by Melissa Lee. That was a song called Extra. Let's slow it down now for one of the most beautiful ballads of the year, and in my opinion, the best GLBT video of the year. It's by Matt Albert from his album Hide Nothing, and the song is called End of the World. If you haven't seen the video, you owe it to yourself to check it out. Matt Albert.
I don't wanna ride this roller coaster. Think I wanna get off, but they buckled me down. Like it's the end of the world. If you don't wanna have this conversation, then you better get out, 'cause we're climbing to our death. At least that's what they want you to think. Just in case we jump the track, I have a confession to make. Something like a corkscrew. I don't wanna fall, I don't wanna fly, I don't wanna be dangled over the edge of a dying romance. But I don't wanna stop, I don't wanna lie, I don't wanna believe it's over. I just wanna stay with you. Didn't mean to scream out quite so loudly when we screeched to a halt. I'm just never prepared for the end of the ride. Maybe we should get on something simpler, like a giant balloon. I've got two tickets left. Instead of giving them away to some stranger, let's make them count. Come on, let's get back in line again. Ride the big one. Don't you wanna fall? Don't you wanna fly? Don't you wanna be dangled over the edge of this aching romance?
Much respect the work of this next artist and got to know her when she released her debut album called Feel Free in 2003. She's Julie Clark and she has already won a number of awards, and her follow-up CD called Change Your Mind is terrific. The song I'm playing from it was chosen as the winner of the National Equality March Song Contest, and she got to perform it at the march in Washington, D.C. in October. Julie Clark and Courage of Our Convictions.
Oh, my dear brothers and sisters too, working to make a change long overdue.
Well, well, well,
we're gonna fight for freedom. Yeah, yeah, we're gonna fight for love. We're gonna fight 'cause nothing less than equals. It's gonna take our time. It's gonna take commitment. It's gonna take the courage of our convictions. Hey, hey, yeah. We're gonna need our families. We're gonna need our friends. We're gonna need a much higher power. That transcends.
Oh, oh,
before it's over. Yeah, yeah, before it's done. Before our equal rights have all been won. It's gonna take our time. It's gonna take commitment. It's gonna take the gotta show them kindness. We gotta show them love. We gotta show them there's nothing here to be scared of.
No, no, no.
Our civil rights can't be denied. Cause we got God and justice.
In addition to Kate Reed, there's another Canadian to make my best of year list. He's Jeff Straker, and you could describe his music as pop cabaret, but I would add infectious, energetic, and fun. From his album, Step Right Up is Hypnotized.
This little favor, these butterflies are dipped in silver. They pull me out on this roller coaster, and man, it feels so good. I'm sailing, climbing up higher and higher. You lift me up, I'm an open fire. You're dragging me round by strings of desire, and I can't go back. I can't. I'm hypnotized, you're falling through. In the cold, I came inside with you, baby. Oh, oh, and this ain't no tale that I've ever told. But it's good, it's good, it's good. I got sun dripping from this soul of mine. So go, it's looking just like your eyes. I open the bottle and taste the wine, and I can't go back again. I'm hypnotized, you're falling through. Higher flying, this is
was Jeff Straker from his album Step Right Up. And we're down to the end of the show, and I need to say that picking these 12 albums and two MP3 singles to showcase was difficult. Because, of course, there are many more recordings from last year that I enjoy and admire. But only so many fit into an hour show. This is J.D. Doyle, and I want to thank you for joining me on the first edition of Out Radio. And you can find additional music on my site, about three more hours worth, at www.outradio.com. Regular listeners of my other show, Queer Music Heritage, have heard this last artist before, as he's the only artist I've featured three times. Obviously, I just love his music, and he gives wonderful interviews. He's Levi Kreiss, and his latest album is called Where I Belong. From it is the theme song from the musical Southern Baptist Sissies. Here's Levi Kreiss and Stained Glass Window.
There's a range way down inside me, a fire that's branded my soul, and it leaves me as one of the many, with a hate so hard to control. Is a big answer. There's a time when we all must decide. Step on up with wisdom and power, and say, children, let's give up the fight. Oh, consider. To demote my position with the God. Oh, but I've discovered a divine resolution.
have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston, with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, and Jack Valensky, with contributing editors Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. The music heard on this program is provided by J.D. Doyle, who also contributes to the audio file segment of This Way Out and who produces Queer Music Heritage, which is an hour-long feature of Queer Voices the fourth Monday of every month. For more information, visit J.D.'s website at queermusicheritage.com. And listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.